This episode of Scorebook Live Today is brought to you by Washington Federal, a proud partner of Scorebook Live. Washington Federal is a bank based in Seattle that operates 235 branches, and it cares deeply about high school sports not only in the Seattle metro area, but across the entire state of Washington. Head to WashingtonFederal.com to learn more or visit your closest branch. Welcome back to this week's Scorebook Live Today podcast. It's Thursday, June 6th. I'm your host, Andy Bueller, a reporter with Scorebook Live Washington, and we've got a fun episode lined up. First, you're going to hear from Dan Dickow, Todd Millis, and myself about our three big things from the week. Will the Gridiron Classic be left out in the cold? Washington high schoolers selected in the MLB draft, and Marshawn Beauchamp, the top-ranked basketball recruit out of the 2020 class, is transferring out of state. Finally, after the break, I catch up with Damon Cassetta Stubbs, pitcher in the Mariners organization and former Kingsway Christian standout who went pro out of high school. I wrote a story about him you can find on SBLiveWA.com, just about his last year after being drafted by the Mariners out of high school. And you can find that, like I said, on Scorebook Live Washington, as well as stories on all the players from Washington selected in the MLB draft. So, without further ado, on the line, we've got Dan Dickow, Todd Millis. Got Dan Dickow, columnist with Scorebook Live, and Todd Millis, senior reporter with Scorebook Live Washington. How you guys doing?
I'm doing great. Summer's almost here. My kids, I've got a large family. We're all looking forward to summer activities. Graduation for high school kids right around the corner. Can't complain.
Yeah, it's just work for me.
Yeah, hey, summer's right around the corner, and an exciting time of year for high school kids and families, I'm sure. There's no shortage of things to talk about this week. We're going to go with just three big things. We'll start with the MLB draft at the top. A ton of local kids drafted, and the draft is still rolling on today. Todd, you've been all over this draft, covering it for SBLiveWA.com, got a chance to talk to one of the draftees and certainly know a lot about a lot of these guys. What have been some of the themes and the biggest storylines over the past few days?
Well, you know, the first day, there were a couple surprises. I mean, I don't think anybody was surprised that Corbin Carroll was a top 20 draft pick. You know, there was some thought that he might be somewhere closer to the top 10. Going to Arizona, great situation for him there. You know, sometimes at that situation, you know, early in drafts, it's about fit. And there aren't a lot of outfielders, especially with his skill set, that are blocking him in the minor league. So there could be a quick ascent in that organization. So that's a good fit for him with Arizona. And then Michael Toglia, you know, he, it's funny. He told a really funny story with us here yesterday about the Rockies were just sort of his organization of destiny, and he was drafted by them coming out of high school at Gig Harbor. He was drafted by them on Monday, and he made a funny quip about, and I was drafted by them in my little league at 10 years old, the Colorado Rockies. So he's a big, strong guy at 6'5", switch hitter, first baseman, and he gets to go hit in probably the most desirable place in America to hit a baseball, and that's Coors Field. So those two things weren't surprising. What did surprise me was the Federal Way right fielder, Joshua Mears, being selected as high as he did. I don't think that many people thought he might be a first-day guy, but getting to go to one of the best minor league organizations in terms of talent in the majors with the San Diego Padres, they're just loaded at every level. He's a big, strong guy. Their philosophy has been grab the best available talent here in the last few years, and that's why they've been able to stockpile such talented guys. He fits in that. He's a big, strong, guy. I mean, he's got, you know, light tower power. I mean, batting practice with him is a real show. And for him to go that early, good for him. It means a little more money for him. So that was the real surprise of the first day. And then after that, you know, it's just sort of a grab bag of what organizations prefer, what they've scouted. And you know, you see guys from Spokane Falls Community College, a few guys from Gonzaga, Dan Dickow's alma mater, a handful of local guys here in the Seattle-Tacoma area, and obviously the big schools of the Pac-12, Washington State, the Huskies, Oregon State, all have had a number of guys selected, including guys that have ties here to Washington. So that, you know, that's the interesting thing about the third day is you never really know what teams really think. They might have a preference on a guy, and certainly there are some names that have popped up here on the last day from rounds 11 on that have been were on nobody's radar except maybe the team that drafted them.
You know, I love some of those comments you made, Todd, about, you know, nobody really knows where a certain player fits on their draft board, because different organizations in different sports value some physical attributes or characteristics of a mental approach from an athlete more than others. And so, you know, you've got your true standouts, obviously, at any sport, but then it's kind of those, you know, I don't necessarily want to call them middle of the road guys because they're still very good athletes, but guys that have characteristics that set them apart to certain organizations are always really interesting to me. I also love that comment you made about the kid who was drafted from the Rockies when he was a 10-year-old in T-ball, or not T-ball, but Little League. You know, that brings back so many good memories for myself as a young kid that, you know, I remember I was on the Cubs, Glenwood Little League in Vancouver, Washington. So it's cool to see that a kid like that kind of remembers his path. I'm sure he remembers his coaches from growing up. And hopefully those coaches can take a little bit of pride in being a part of his journey.
I've got a question, Todd. I'm wondering, you know, obviously teams and professional franchises go through extensive scouting and are so well versed in the talent pool of these draft classes. Dan, I know you're familiar with the draft process at the NBA level and just everything that those players go through, but are they scouting character as much as they are measurables? When you think of a guy like Corbin Carroll, a guy like Josh Mears, that you're getting at such a young age?
Go ahead, Dan.
Absolutely they are. You know, I think one of the differences from the NBA and the baseball draft that I know of is, you know, they've got to balance the family structure in baseball for the most part, and the understanding of, does this kid maybe want to go to college for 2 years or 3 years, whatever you know, the guidelines and restrictions are, because it's different than basketball, and many times you know, you can circumvent them going to college by drafting them earlier and giving them a nice signing bonus. Many times there's kind of an evaluation period of any athlete going into the professional ranks. And in that evaluation period, you are going to have absolute positive check marks and negative check marks. And many times one of the boxes that has to be checked is, does this kid have a passion for the game and a work ethic that is going to allow them to become better than maybe other people view them as at this moment in time, and will they pass other players? So I think that's something that the better organizations really dive into and look at, whatever sport it is. But I think that's one thing in baseball that, you know, they're also going to look at, does this kid really want to go to college? Does this kid really do we want to hold off for 2 years and see if he's available? Because that many times they'll draft a kid out of high school if they think or they have background knowledge that, hey, you know what, they're ready to just go to rookie ball because they don't have interest in college.
Yeah, and to kind of piggyback on that, you know, assignability is a huge thing in the Major League draft process. That's kind of why you see a guy like Carter Young, who's a top 75 to top 100 talent. He hasn't been drafted yet. Now, he might get drafted by the end of today, but if teams have done their homework and know that, A, he's looking for a certain amount on a signing bonus, or B, he's very committed to the college and has stated that he's very committed to the college he's signed with, then you're going to let those type of players, you're not going to waste a draft pick on a guy that is a third, fourth, fifth round guy. I mean, you might draft him in the 25th, 26th round and see if he has a change of heart. But there are reasons why, you know, Carter Young, a guy like that, Henry Gargis, another Stanford first baseman from Davis High School in Yakima, they're still on the board. Those guys have declared they're very, very committed to the colleges they've signed with. So signability is a huge thing in the major league draft process. And you talked about character. I mean, let's look at 2 years ago with Luke Heimlich. He was a first-round talent. You tell me, is character a big thing when in the draft process? He didn't get drafted in either year he was eligible as a junior or senior. I think it's becoming more and more prevalent in the draft process, in the evaluation period with these players.
No question. There were obviously extenuating circumstances with Heimlich's draft stock, as was well documented. But no, that's it's great to see, you know, so many names get called so early. And Josh Mears is a guy who, I mean, I think, Todd, you and I both independently had talked to Arlo Evesek, the head coach at Federal Way, and he had just said very similarly glowing things about, okay, this guy's like 6'5", 250, and just glides in the outfield. I think he compared him to Bo Jackson.
Well, I've heard Frank, like an athletic version of Frank Thomas. I mean, he's that big. He's a big guy with underrated athleticism. Now, you know, will he stick in the outfield? That remains to be seen. But right now, it sounds like he's got enough baseball instinct and athleticism that right now he will enter his professional career as a right fielder. Whether he remains that as he climbs the ladder remains to be seen.
Big thing number two. The Gridiron Classic, is it out in the cold? It's certainly looking like that now that the latest news with the WIA parting ways with the Tacoma Dome, the executive board on Sunday voting not to re-up what would have been a 3-year deal with the Tacoma Dome, which leaves the state championship football game likely outside at multiple venues for the first time since, what, 94? Is that right, Todd?
Oh no! Since the early '70s, when it was at Memorial Stadium, it's pretty much been in the King Dome and the Tacoma Dome since then. So only the first few years of what we know as Gridiron Classic and a WIA state championship has it. It's basically been indoors the last 40 years.
So Todd, you've spoken to John Miller of the WIA, who oversees football, and I spent the last couple days talking to various coaches from around the state about their reaction. You know, this is something that will significantly change the look of a championship weekend. You know, fans won't be able to, post up for a day at one place and watch, a day or 2 days and watch a bunch of games. For you, what are some of the options that you've heard about that the WIA might look toward?
Well, first off, and I know there's been reports out there, nothing is definitive. The WIA has not settled on a set of high school stadiums in a particular area. Now, I know John Miller has talked about three stadiums as an example of most of the things that they would want in the first run of this new state championship era. And they mentioned Sparks Stadium in Puyallup. You mentioned Harry E. Lang Stadium in Lakewood and Mount Tahoma Stadium in Tacoma. They're vicinity-wise, they're within 20 minutes of one another if somebody had to get to from one game to another. They have, you know, vast parking in all three facilities. They have covered seating. They have multiple locker rooms or multiple meeting areas. They have ample restroom and concession areas, all the things that go into a state championship for both the player and the fan experience. Now, John Miller is the first person to tell you we'd be idiots if we had two schools meet up in a certain geographic area for a state championship hundreds of miles away from Tacoma and still force them to come to Tacoma. So they're using a lot of the Oregon model, you know, this sort of fluid model that I know that you've reported a lot on here in the last few weeks, Andy, in certain situations for geographic location, for weather, etc. So, again, this is the first year of a new era. John Miller is the first person to concede we are going to learn a lot. There are a lot of cons with this. There are a lot of pros with this. It just depends on what, as the consumer and as the fan, that you value most. Do you value the one-stop shop, you know, the Tacoma Dome or a, you know, CenturyLink Field or the Kibbe Dome, something along those lines that give you sort of a destination, something that kids talk about. They, you know, for years they talked about the Tacoma Dome, and we're trying to get to the Dome, or we're trying to get to CenturyLink Field, or we're trying to get to the King Dome, or wherever. That's gone now. So that's a big con with a lot of people who think, you know, who think of the end of the road for these kids, and including parents and kids themselves and coaches. Now I know the WI is going to try and make it a little, you know, try and give the consumer, the fan, a break with, you know, free parking, tickets that cost less expensive, concessions that are less expensive. So they understand that this is not going to have the same championship feel like a Tacoma Dome does, but with the growing economics and the way that they're balancing a budget, this is the new era. Whether it lasts a year, a couple years, or the next 10 years, it remains to be seen. So, but they're very open to ideas. They're not set on one particular geographic location or model. So it's going to be an interesting few months to see how this all comes together. Fortunately, they've had the state semifinals outdoors the last few years. So they like the blueprint that they've sort of developed as a starting point for the state championships, obviously knowing that they have to tweak those particular games, because obviously they mean a lot more.
You know, to jump in there, Todd, I personally like the model. You know, as somebody who is, I've never been really into the high school football scene because I don't have kids that play football. Obviously, in high school, I had friends that played football when I was growing up. But, you know, you look at football, at least I do, in the perspective of, hey, football is meant to be played outdoors. And whether that is August with practice leading up to the season, or September and the Friday night lights as the high school group kind of goes through, I've always viewed football as an outdoor game, and whether that's right or wrong, you know, that's just kind of the way I viewed it. But I love the fact that the WIA has said, you know what? What if the two best teams in the state happen to be Southwest Washington this year? We're going to make it easy, and we're going to make that game down in Southwest Washington so the majority of fans can make it. What if one year it's Central Washington and an Eastern Washington team? We're going to find the right event the venue to place that event. I think that's just forward thinking. Now it's going to place a lot of onus on the WIA to quickly make those decisions once the brackets are revealed or the matchups are there, and kind of plan it out. Hey, these are the what ifs. And then make those plans. But I see nothing wrong with what they're doing. I actually applaud them.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I've been talking to coaches around the state the last couple days just to get their perspective for a forthcoming story on SB Live WA. And, you know, a lot of what both of you guys are saying have been echoed in some of the sentiments from coaches. You know, to John Eagle at Camas had said, you know, hey, I have guys with shirts that say Road to the Dome starts here. It evokes the Dome. The Dome has this sort of, you know, end all be all, you know, magnificent stage feel to it that players really, really kind of see as the pinnacle of high school sports. That being said, you know, Adam Matheson at Mountain View High School in Vancouver, he's saying, you know, look, this just provides us opportunity to enhance our state football championship in other ways. You know, weather's going to be a factor, and, like, you know, bring it on.
Yeah, we'll see. we'll see how much that impacts certain players in different regions of the state. I mean, you look at you know, NFL guys, they have to play through those issues. Same with college. You know, all high school football players, and hopefully I'm not painting too broad of a stroke, but I would imagine that most high school football players are thinking along the lines of, just like a college player, just like an NFL player, hey, I would love to play in the snow. I would love to play in the elements. Bring it on. So, You know, again, the WIA, I think I like this decision, and I'm sure they will take year one as an experiment, see how it goes. And if anything needs to be tweaked or adjusted, they'll make the right decision.
No question. And it's a story that, you know, we will continue to be in front of, and that certainly is not going to be resolved anytime soon, as they're going to take, you know, the summer and possibly throughout the fall to make this decision. So on to the big item number three, Marjon Beauchamp. He's leaving the state of Washington. A report by Prep Hoops Washington said that he's transferring out of the state to a basketball academy, a Bella Vista Prep in Arizona. It'll be his fourth high school in as many years, and boy, did he have success on the high school basketball scene in the state of Washington. Freshman year at Nathan Hale, wins a state 3A state title. Sophomore year at Garfield, wins a 3A state title. And his junior year at Rainier Beach, finished third in state. What implications does this have on high school basketball in Washington next year? And what does this say? How significant is this that Beauchamp is leaving the state?
You know, I think it's really interesting, and I think it's a microcosm of everything that's going on in high school basketball pertaining to, I don't want to necessarily call it a conflict between high school and AAU, but it's definitely out there. And Marjon is not the only guy that was going through this across the country. I think that you're looking at a young man who's very talented. I think you're looking at a young man who continues to look at, hey, what are my options? Where can I be put in the best potential spot to be evaluated by coaches and or reach my goals? And one of his stated goals that I've read over the last week or two is, hey, you know what? I'm going to go here to this prep school, and I think this is going to put me in the best potential light to make a McDonald's All-American game, to make a Jordan Classic All-American game. And that's just his thought process. That's his input, whether it's right or wrong. Unfortunately, in this day and age of high school and AAU basketball, it's hard to determine that. You know, you look at Jaden McDaniels at Federal Way. Hey, you know what? He was undervalued by many people nationally. He was under-recruited nationally until going into his senior year, when he had an amazing leading into his senior year AAU circuit with Seattle Rotary. And then, I mean, a lot of high-level programs were very interested, but after last summer, everybody was interested, including the blue chips. We all know that University of Washington Coach Hopkins got him. But you know, he made the McDonald's game. He made a number of other All-American games. To each is his own, I guess, is the right way to put it. I don't necessarily fault him, but I don't necessarily, I don't think it's the path for everybody, put it that way. But it's becoming the new norm across the country. And I think you're going to start seeing it, unfortunately, I think you're going to start seeing it occasionally with players here in the state of Washington. Because if you go to some of the other places across the country, your Californias, your New Yorks, your Chicago area kids, they're transferring to prep schools left and right, whether it's Oak Hill in Virginia, La Lumiere, wherever it may be, IMG Academy. It's happening everywhere. And he feels that he has the best opportunity to reach his goals by doing this. You know, best of luck to him, but I do think he could have achieved and reached those goals here in the state of Washington, and it'll be interesting to see how everything shakes out.
I want to relay a conversation I had with Jason Kerr, the O'Day coach, and this is when he was out of coaching. He was sort of serving as a liaison for the WIAA, and this was a hot topic a few years ago, and I asked Jason about it, and he says, look, you have to look at it from a broader perspective. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of students, not just student athletes, students who want to transfer to other schools in within their districts, out of their districts, in different cities for activities such as band, drama, DECA. I mean, you name it, any club, any extracurricular activity, thousands and thousands of students looking to maybe it's a change of scene, a change of scenery, or maybe they want to go to a school that has a better community band or jazz band, looking to improve their situation. It just so happens basketball, football, some other sports here recently, you know, that's those type of transfers are a little higher profile. Those are the ones that hit in the newspaper, in the media, on social media. So let's keep that in mind before we start pointing the finger at people. I'm not saying we are. I'm not pointing the finger at anybody at pointing the finger. But let's keep that in mind when a young man like this decides he wants to go out of state, or an Avery Bradley wants to go out of state, or an Isaiah Thomas wants to go out of state. There are students, lots and lots of students that we will never know about that are transferring to different schools to try and better their situation in a particular extracurricular activity or field.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's a great great anecdote and good insight. I mean, Isaiah Thomas is a great example. I mean, is that, you know, these guys, it's not the last time that we're hearing about them, and they're not, you know, selling away their allegiance to the state of Washington or their area. You know, Isaiah is one of the most visible, you know, pro athletes, if not the most visible, in Tacoma, right, Todd?
Oh, absolutely. He's the best offensive high school basketball player I've ever seen from the state of Washington. And very visible. And that, but I mean, when a young man like that, that has a following, I mean, I've never been in a high school gymnasium that sold out, that were standing room only just to see one person, like it was at Curtis High School with Isaiah. And then he decided he needed to go back east to put himself in a better situation for a scholarship. It hurt people in this community, you know, especially given that he had this big state tournament, and the next year, you know, he was pretty much deciding to go a different direction. So there were, but you know, again, he's one of many students, maybe not going out of state, but changing schools for whatever reason. So let's keep that in mind as we move forward with this.
And, you know, Isaiah Thomas came back and played for UW. Beauchamp has a UW offer among other, you know, few blue chip programs. So he is uncommitted and will have a decision to make, but it's, you know, it's not off the table that he ends up playing college back in this state.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right, Andy. I mean, he's a player that, you know, if you look at who's recruiting him, I don't think he has the level of schools that a Jaden McDaniels has. And I say that because anytime seemingly Kentucky's recruiting you, you're viewed as a one and done. But Marjon Beauchamp has a lot of very good schools recruiting him, Alabama being one. I believe, you know, you've seen a number of Pac-12 schools, including UW, like you just mentioned. He's going to have great opportunities. He's looking at a potential spot that can help him enhance his senior year and his ability to maximize his abilities moving forward. And so, you know, to each is his own. You wish him nothing but the best. You know, in following and in knowing a lot of people that know him well, you know, the state of Washington is important to him, so I would imagine Washington's towards the top of his list, and I would imagine he seems to be one of the guys that is going to come back and be a part of the community if he gets to the point where he has that ability to impact people the way that other former players have.
Undoubtedly. Undoubtedly. Dan, Todd, thank you guys for your time. It was great to hear your insight.
Absolutely, always good to get together with the three with the two of you. You know, we've got a lot of good stuff coming up in this the rest of this month of June, even though high school graduation is right around the corner.
No question. Best of luck to you, Dan, with your kids on the last final days of the school year.
Things just get busier at my house, I'll tell you that much.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Want the Scorebook Life podcast delivered to you every week for free? Head to the Apple Podcast app, Spotify, Google Play, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcasts. Search Scorebook Life today. Hit that subscribe button. And while you're there, give us a rate and review. It really helps us do what we do. And we love hearing your input. Be sure to say nice things about Todd and Dan while you're at it. Follow Scorebook Live Washington on Twitter and Instagram at SB Live WA and on Facebook at Scorebook Live Washington. Up next, you'll hear an interview with Damon Cassetta Stubbs, who's a starting pitcher with the West Virginia Power, the Class A affiliate of the Seattle Mariners. Damon graduated a year ago from Kingsway Christian, a 1A school in Vancouver, and I caught up with Cassetta Stubbs for a story that you can actually read now on sblivewa.com. But there was so much I didn't have space to include in the story, as Damon just goes in depth about life in the minors, and I found it really intriguing. I hope you do too. So without further ado, Damon Cassetta Stubbs. What's it like being on a 5-day rotation?
It's cool, actually. It's nice having time to actually do arm care and stuff and not have to rush back into it. The relievers are all doing stuff right before their start or right before they might go out, you know? You have no clue when they're going to pitch. And it's nice having a 5-day rotation to get back to where I am, you know?
Yeah. Does it feel weird?
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
You played some first base in high school, right?
Yeah.
Does it feel weird just not playing at all in those 4 days?
Yeah, it kind of is. I kind of sit there in the dugout and want to hit sometimes.
Yeah.
I miss it, but I kind of knew my time was over hitting, you know? Sure. But I definitely would like to hit every once in a while.
Yeah. Do you ever take BP or anything?
No, never. They don't let us.
Yeah.
I think at double A we start taking BP because double A pitchers hit. Yeah.
So
you're in a few years.
Does it feel like a year ago you were going through the draft process? I remember talking to you leading up to that, and that was 12 months ago. What's this last year been like, and can you believe it's been, you know, a full year?
No, yeah, it feels like it's been 10 years.
Oh, really?
Especially because the off season was long. I was down in Arizona for the strength camp, which sucked, but I had 5 months off, you know. It was fun, but it was long, you know.
What are you doing during those 5 months? Do you, get another job, or how does that work? Are you just training?
I took a few online classes. I work out a lot. I worked with my dad a few times. He does heating and air, so not much. It's kind of just a lot of preparing for the next season, you know. I'm going to try and take a full load of classes this fall, though.
So you started in the Arizona League, and then...
Yep.
Wound up this year in Modesto.
Mm-hmm.
And then now you're in West Virginia. Do you have kind of any inkling of what that whole, you know, what the next step's going to be? And you know, within the past year, when those moves were coming, were you aware that they were coming? Was your agent telling you?
No, I had no clue.
No clue?
I really wasn't expecting to be here. They were expecting to send me to Everett this year. But I was throwing pretty good, and they were like, you know what, let's just get him out of here. So it worked out in my favor. Everett would have been really cool, but, you know, just a lot better for my future, you know. Yeah, just skipping a level and just getting things going faster, you know.
So, I mean, you really don't know, you know, depending on when you...
No, no clue. I could get a call tomorrow saying I could call up or down, and then I have to pack all my stuff.
What was that like when you were in Modesto? Because you weren't there for very long, were you?
No, I was there for 4 or 5 days.
Oh, wow.
They had a game going to 20 innings. They needed some guy to come up and see how they get the next day. And I was like, all right.
What does your day look like on when you're starting?
I usually just sleep till I wake up. I kind of bum on my start days. I wake up at 12 or 12:30. And then just to get my sleep in, you know. And then I literally show up to the field an hour and a half before the game and do all my arm care and stuff, get ready and go out. So it's pretty nice not having to show up early.
What are you most proud of so far?
I think the Everett thing was pretty cool, or the Modesto thing was pretty cool, because I got up there. I left at 4. Flight left at 5. Got in. Took an hour and a half drive to Modesto and stuff. I was falling asleep in the bullpen. Didn't take a nap. I was running 4 hours of sleep. They told me the night before I was going up, and then I go in the seventh day or whatever it was, and I threw really well, you know. But it was crazy, so I was running on 2 hours of sleep, 3 hours of travel and stuff. It was horrible. Yeah, we had a game. I didn't pitch in it, and then I got home. I was taking a nap. I saw a phone call for it, and I answered it, and they're like, "Hey, we're in an extra inning game. We're gonna send him to Disney tomorrow." I was like, "All right." And then the flight was super early. It was a mess. I was so tired.
So you said you fell asleep in the dugout a couple hours before the game?
I was falling asleep in the bullpen.
Oh, man.
I took three scoops of pre-workout and drank coffee and stuff.
Dang. Were people pretty happy with your performance, too? You were able to sleep well that night?
Yeah, for sure. We had the farm directors there. And I think, honestly, that the outing was the reason why they called me out, you know? Thank you.